There's nothing better than feeling comfortable in your own shoes. And that doesn't mean flopping down on the couch with bunny slippers. Maybe you're a parent raising a little rock star, or a tech nomad working from anywhere and jumping from one thing to the next. Whoever you are, Allbirds wants you to be comfortable in your actual shoes too. Their wool runners, pipers, and loungers are designed for a level of coziness that makes you feel like you can do anything. You might even forget you're wearing them. And their shoes are so stylish, they go perfectly with a wear whatever I want attitude. Allbirds is all about loving Mother Nature, too, because no one wants to leave a bad footprint. Each shoe is carefully crafted from natural materials that tread lightly on our planet. From ZQ-certified Merino wool to a bouncy midsole made from sweet foam, the world's first carbon-negative EVA material made from sugarcane.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on into a celebratory Friday on the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast across all the great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS, number to jump on in. 855-212-4227. And you could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That is ZACHGELB. And producing the extravaganza for the next 4 hours, the happiest I've ever seen him is Hot Take Hickey.
His dumb producer, Hot Take Hickey.
I am 1-0 as a Penn State basketball fan. It's that simple. Last night, Hot Take Hickey needed my support, because if I didn't join the bandwagon, they would have lost. I said that yesterday to lead the show. I'll start it today to lead today's show. And I saw one tweet from Hot Take Hickey last night that just showed you the power of Zach Gelb in the Penn State community was working, because he's never seen Penn State play a first half like that, where they not only got out to a lead, but they dominated. Absolutely dominated Texas A&M going into the half up 38-22, and then they cruised to a 76-59 victory, and it was a Penn State three-point party last night as they slay the Aggies of Texas A&M. Penn State shot 59% from three, and from the field they did shoot 48.2%. So Hickey, out of the kindness of my heart, I dug together and created a special intro for the show today. You have not listened to this yet. You have not heard this yet. So let's go right now. Music, por favor. We are Penn State. Go Pat Kraft. Go Nittany Lions. Go Micah Shrewsbury. I'm going to lead you guys to a victory tonight.
It's fun seeing all the Penn Staters that showed up and were cheering for us.
We are Penn State!
But, like, we want to go on a run.
They should build a statue of me tonight if Penn State wins. They could use a new statue on that campus.
Fires and scores. I mean, that is just fish in a barrel for Funk. It's like shooting layups right now from 25 feet for Andrew Funk.
I think you're just in a rut, and you need a little helping hand by your friend and yours truly, and that's what I'm trying to do tonight with Penn State.
Ryan Hickey proud.
I think you should welcome me aboard your bandwagon of Penn State. You're a mush.
Ryan Hickey proud. Ryan Hickey proud. Ryan Hickey proud.
And then maybe if they're when they're in the second round, Pat Kraft will invite me and I'll be an honorary captain.
No big deal.
And the Nittany Lions advance to Saturday in round two.
No big deal.
I can't even now enjoy a Penn State win, because now it's Zach coming in tomorrow. We're going to lead the show. Here I am, the savior, the whisperer, the winner.
We are Penn State. That's right, Hickey. Let's go. I got to hear from Ryan. You got to be fired up. You should say thank you, but that's all right. The floor is yours. Give me your reaction. Penn State, big, 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 big victory. They take down one team from Texas, and they try to take down another team from Texas coming up tomorrow night. Let's go, Hickey.
That was the best game I've ever seen Penn State basketball play. I am fired up. nothing to do with you. Penn State's actually a good team. They are beating good teams. This team is peaking at the right time. They have a ton of senior experience. As everybody saw yesterday, this team is lethal from three. Lethal. Guess what, folks? Experience, lethal from three, all lead to being a very dangerous tournament team. I hope Texas was watching yesterday. Actually, I hope they weren't. I hope they were not. Allow Andrew Funk to just get open look after open look, and we'll see in the Sweet 16. That's all I'm hoping for, Texas. Do not watch any of those games yesterday, because right now, you have no idea what you're in for, but a storm is brewing right now in Des Moines, Iowa, and it is a color of blue and white. The nits are hot. The rest of the country allowed it to happen, and yesterday was a culmination. Let's go!
Okay. I'm going to make you be a peacock, and I'm going to let you fly on your own. I helped you out yesterday out of the kindness of my heart. I was a very benevolent person, and I gave you my public support of Penn State. It did pain me to do that, and I will not continue to do that. So now we're going to really see how much of a mush you are, because you just guaranteed a victory, and you said your team is going to be in the Sweet 16. You are not going to have my support coming up tomorrow. And then on Monday, when we get back here at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, to kick off another kick-ass week of the Zach Gelb Show, that's going to be very big, because there's been many days where we have hosted shows and you have made these ridiculous claims about teams that you've rooted for, and then we have basically had to hold your wake and then bury you and have your funeral as well with just some awful takes and the belief that you have in your teams. I helped you last night. You know, I thought for sure when you guaranteed Arizona was going to win the NCAA tournament and then they're out in the first round, you needed my helping hand. That hand is no longer extended, and now we'll see if you could get the job done up against Texas. So you're pretty confident. I didn't know what type of hickey we were going to get today, to be honest. I thought you were just going to be very excited. I did not know how you were going to process the next game. I thought maybe you'd want like another 24 hours to really just bathe in this victory and marinate in this victory and just be so happy about this victory. But I do respect this about you, is that no matter win or lose, you always go to the next game or the next way to try to spin one of your teams. And now you actually genuinely believe, Hickey, that Penn State as a 10 seed, and I know yesterday we had a 15 beat a 2. Mitch Henderson's going to join us coming up in 10 minutes from now for the Princeton Tigers, their head coach. And we also did see number 13 Furman yesterday take down number 4 Virginia. You believe the upset party is going to continue. You know, a 10 beating a 7, like you would say, no big deal, no big deal. But if a 10 beats a 2, that's a whole different ballgame when you look at how legit the Penn State program is. You genuinely believe, it's not just fandom. You actually believe the Nittany Lions are winning tomorrow?
Well, I'm nervous for tomorrow. Don't get me wrong. The length of Texas is concerning.
Well, now
the lack of rebounding for Penn State is concerning. But all I heard all week,
not having my support, is
the
concerning.
Last 4 days was how underseeded Texas A&M was. It was criminal. Criminal. That they were 7, it was an absolute joke by the committee. They're so much better than that. And Penn State took them to the woodshed. Took them to the woodshed. Now, are they going to shoot like 85% from 3 tomorrow? Absolutely not. They're going to have to, though, shoot well from 3. And I don't see why not, if they do, why they can't beat Texas.
I think you are allowing like 3 or 4 people on Twitter to really ruin your day and alter your view of this game. And I know our boss, Spike Eskin, just sent out an email, and he was basically saying people in the company pay too much attention to Twitter, and most of the listeners are not on Twitter. But with that being said, I think that email may or may not have been directed right to you, because I don't actually believe a lot of people were doubting Penn State heading into that game. I felt very confident that they were going to win, and I don't think a lot of people were like, they were surprised it was a blowout. I thought people thought it was going to be a close game, but I don't think it was stunning that Penn State won the game like you're trying to make it out to be.
I guess we're looking at two different things. Again, all I heard was Texas A&M underseeded. It's a disgrace
like
that it's
morons.
Been a 7.
I
you know,
saw
everyone
tweets.
Is looking ahead to Texas A&M in a rematch, although it's not football. It's still Texas A&M. A lot of that I saw as well. So, again, I love kind of being the underdog, the snake in the grass. Everyone look at Texas. Look, full disclosure, I have them in my Final Four. So I hope everyone is looking at the Longhorns, getting ready, looking at Houston now being damaged and injured, and maybe looking at an opening for Texas to run to the Final Four. Sleep on them. Sleep on
them. Wait, but you are then even sleeping on your own school. You didn't pick them in a bracket that means nothing to upset Texas, and then today you're going to basically say Penn State's going to the Sweet 16? What changed?
Well, I wasn't sure how they're going to respond.
So you didn't have confidence in your team.
I had no idea what to expect. I've never seen them in the tournament. Penn State, they're a team that makes everything close. Now, they've gotten some good breaks lately. Am I supposed to think that if a game comes close again, they're going to get good breaks? I don't know. I picked them to win yesterday, but I was also trying to be realistic. And now the way I see them play.
But you don't have to be realistic in my bracket. Like, for example.
Why not? I want to win.
If Temple
I'm the reigning champ. I'm not trying to embarrass yourself here having Penn State, you know, go to the Final Four.
I'm not saying that. You already embarrassed yourself after you had Arizona winning the championship and they lose in the first round to Princeton. Yeah, go Tigers, baby. All I'm saying is this. If my school ever finds a way to get back into the NCAA tournament, I would put them in the Sweet 16 and probably no further than that. I think bare minimum, you put your own school, and I don't think anyone's picking Penn State to win a national championship, and the next time Temple's in the tournament, no one's going to pick them to win a national championship. But I think a rule of thumb when it's your school, and let's be real, none of us are basketball, college basketball geniuses or anything like that. Brackets are made to have fun. No one's having a perfect bracket. I think it's pretty weak that you didn't put your own school in the Sweet 16. I'm not saying Elite Eight. I'm not saying Final Four. I'm not saying championship game. I'm not saying you put them cutting down the nets and on the podium with the one shining moment. But bare minimum, you got to have a little confidence with your own school getting to the Sweet 16 when, 2 days later, now all of a sudden you're leading that charge of Penn State to the Sweet 16.
I have no regrets. I root against my bracket all the time. This is old hat now, and I'm excited that now rooting against my bracket means actually rooting for my own team instead of just an upset to happen, which is 99% of the case.
Now, a few takeaways from yesterday and then a few that did bleed over into today with some of the games to eventually close out later tonight the first round of the tournament. We talked all about the Virginia, the embarrassing loss yesterday to Furman, another double-digit seed taking care of Tony Bennett's squad at Virginia. I know they had a national championship a few years ago. But one thing we didn't highlight yesterday was the Kihei Clark play. We highlighted that. But Tony Bennett had a timeout in his pocket there. Now, you're under 10 seconds. When your player gets trapped, he could have easily called that timeout there. And then you reset, and maybe we never have the situation where Kihei Clark, who is a longtime Virginia player, was there on the national championship team when he was a freshman, where he just so uncharacteristically throws the ball away. Hickey, after you really have had that game, just settle in and you go back and review it. How much do you crush Tony Bennett for not taking a timeout yesterday when his player was trapped and you saw him panic in a big spot like that?
I'll be honest, I'm not sure the rule. Is he even allowed to call a timeout? Does it have to come from the player? Which if that's, either way, it should have came from Kihei Clark, whether Tony Bennett could call a timeout or not. You are that experienced in that situation. The referee's right there next to you. You have to know to call a timeout. The last thing you can do is just blindly throw the ball up to half court and hope things work out your way. When you are that, you're not a freshman. You, like I said, you won a national title, so you know what it takes to win the big game late in the moment. You just have to know in that situation, time ticking down. I got nowhere else to go. I picked up the ball. I got to call a timeout and let's reset.
Now, and I saw he definitely could have called timeout, but I saw afterwards, and he gave an explanation on why he did not call a timeout in his post game interview. So he said, I don't know if Kihei thought no one was there and the clock was running out. When asked about desperation heave, I'm not sure, but we should have called a timeout, or we could have gone. I got in a tie up. We had it and unfolded. I think had he gotten tied up, he would have called a timeout in there. So. He did concede that he would have to see how it played out on tape. Still, his main focus appeared to be Clark's decision not to go for a tie-up as opposed to the team's collect decision not to call a timeout. So I guess that's then talking about afterwards as well, after they did go down by one in that scenario as well. So that's the Tony Bennett side of the thing. I'm still stunned about, and we'll talk to Mitch Henderson in a little bit, but I'm still stunned about Arizona basically not being able to score in the last 5 minutes of the game and only being able to put up 5 points in the last 8 minutes and change. Mitch Henderson is going to join us in a few minutes from now. He joined us earlier in the week. And Hickey, in that scenario, going into that game, Mitch Henderson even said to us on the air, he's like, yeah, you give us some advice and some help on how we could try to stop these bigs for Arizona when a team is just so, you know, has so much more talent than you. You know, and we've seen upsets before like this happen, but to not even be able to practically score for what felt like the last 8 minutes, when you look at only 5 points in the final 8 minutes and then no points in the final 5 minutes, that to me is still stunning a day later.
You are telling me for sure how stunning it is.
I can't believe it.
But you're right. It's also just so funny when you hear Mitch Henderson. It wasn't like, it didn't sound like he was doubting, but it was almost just like a credit to Arizona when he was on before playing the game. It was just like, look, their size is something that's going to be a massive problem for us. Like, we're going to have to do something, but it's going to be really tough. And then, like you said, to
you kind believe of, in your team, but you know how tough of a matchup it is.
Right. To be at that spot when it was, 2 days ago, 3 days ago, and then now a day or two later, 48 hours later, to hold them scoreless the last 5 minutes and really play some really good defense and fluster Arizona and get them out of their rhythm. It just goes to show you what a great job Mitch Henderson was doing it and the adjustments you were able to make. It was impressive.
Also, Duke and UCLA, dominant wins. We were wondering how UCLA was going to fare with Jalen Clark out, and they did an unbelievable job there. And for Duke, hey, Duke sent a big statement. People thought that was going to be a game, including myself, up against Oral Roberts, and they just took it to them through the first 5 minutes of the game, and that game never did get close. So good stuff by Duke and UCLA. And now when we talk about injuries, Alabama and Houston, you know, Alabama, they're going to have Maryland tomorrow. I think they should be fine, but we don't know how healthy Brandon Miller is going to be. No points yesterday, only played in 19 minutes, has a groin injury going back to their game before yesterday in that SEC tournament that Nate Oates revealed to Tracy Wilson. And then for Houston, they had two injuries. We know Marcus Sasser was hurt going into the game. He played, re-aggravated the groin, did not play in the second half. And then Jamal Sheed has a hyperextended knee. Now, both players said they're going to play tomorrow. But for Houston, who did not look good up against Northern Kentucky, I just wonder what you're going to see out of them tomorrow and how healthy their players are going to be. And, oh, yeah, by the way, you don't have, even though the Final Four is going to be in Houston, right now you don't have the home court advantage. I know it's a neutral site. But you get Auburn, who did a nice job yesterday up against Iowa. And we know Auburn down the stretch is 4-9 to close out the year. So good job by Bruce Pearl and the Tigers. But now Auburn is playing in Birmingham up against Houston. And Houston's not 100% healthy. That could be upset alert tomorrow in our first one seed going down.
I think they are going to go down. Auburn's winning tomorrow. Friend of the show, Bruce Pearl. I like the way they're playing. But more importantly, I am nervous. Very nervous about Houston and their injuries. They're gonna play, like I said, they're gonna play tomorrow. They're gonna start tomorrow.
But how effective and how long can they last?
But you're talking about your best player having a groin injury that the next time he tried to play after suffering the groin injury on Saturday could not make it past the first half. I don't see how one day of rest is going to now all of a sudden going from 14 minutes in the first half yesterday to now playing 30 minutes tomorrow and being effective. I don't think that's going to happen. Hyperextended knee, again, I'm no doctor. I don't know if 24 hours is enough to make sure you're healthy and ready to go. It's just awful timing for Houston, especially with the Final Four there, and you can kind of have it in your own backyard.
And you never want to see a team get derailed by injury.
Right.
We're not like Andrew Perloff, who roots for Edwin Diaz to get hurt.
That's right. We are classy here at the Zach Gelb Show. We are not classless, class C. And we hate injuries for teams, even if it does go in our benefit. I did have my bracket, Houston going down in round two. But I don't like the injuries. It's sad, and I think it's going to catch up to him tomorrow.
And then good job by Pitt. They crush Iowa State today. That was an upset. And then Xavier almost lost to Kennesaw State. They had to come all the way back. I didn't have any problems with the officiating at the end, but Xavier Rashawn Miller, he had to sweat once again. But this time, he's advancing to the round of 32. Mitch Henderson will join us next. And this is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Preece a fading three from the top. Left side of the rim, though. Grabbed by Awoma, and Awoma is fouled with 3 seconds left. He's going to go to the line to shoot free throws. and the Princeton Tigers have a chance to secure an upset win. Hella Larson the rebound. The horn is going to sound. The Princeton Magic is alive and well. The Princeton Tigers upset Arizona.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
How about that? That was Ryan Racky on the Westwood One NCAA Radio Network. The Princeton Tigers are dancing to the second round of the NCAA tournament as a 15 seed yesterday. They did take down number 2 Arizona by a final score of 59-55. And now joining us is the head men's basketball coach of the Princeton Tigers, and that is our pal Mitch Henderson. Coach, congratulations. Really excited for your program. Thanks so much for doing this again this week.
This is a pleasure. Thank you. We're absolutely thrilled out here. It's so fun, and I'm so proud of our group, and look forward to chatting with you.
When you hear that the Princeton Tigers defeated Arizona and you guys are now playing tomorrow night in the second round of the NCAA tournament against Missouri, just what goes through your mind?
Well, you know, you prepare your team to win, and we did that. And but we were down the whole game, and when you get to the end of the game and you're like, okay, that was incredible. You know, you take a couple hours and all of a sudden you realize like something really big happened. Then you start looking at Missouri and you got to dive right back in. So, you know, it's I know it looks like an upset and it's, you know, 15 versus 2, but I have a really gritty group and they've always believed they can do it. And we're playing the best basketball we've played all season right now, which is what you need to be able to do if you want to keep winning.
What did you guys do so well down the stretch? Because you look at Arizona, in the last 8 minutes, they only had 4 points, and in the last 4 minutes and 45 seconds, you held them off the scoreboard.
We struggled to score. We didn't shoot the ball very well, 4-for-25 from three. We had 11 turnovers. I thought we'd have to have single-digit turnovers to be successful, but I thought what we did best was we limited their transition opportunities. So Coach, you know, Tommy, it's unbelievable how they like 35-foot passes right to the front of the rim. But we did a great job getting back in transition and fighting with their bigger guys. We were giving up a lot of size, too. But I just thought those last 4 minutes was a real example of what we've been able to do this season. The guys played with such grit and toughness. We really got all the, you know, all the loose balls, those things that I think matter when, you know, you're playing in a big environment. And then, you know what, the crowd helped. Incredible sports town out here, Sacramento. We really benefited from the energy from our crowd.
Mitch Henderson, the head coach of the Princeton Tigers, are dancing on to the second round of the NCAA tournament here with us on CBS Sports Radio. We know you bleed Princeton, and the iconic moment where you were celebrated and jumping for joy when you were a player in 1996 when your squad did take down UCLA in a 4-13 matchup, and then all these years later to be a part of a 15 beating a 2 and you being the coach of it. Just what is those two moments, the two of the biggest moments in Princeton program history, you playing a part and a big part in both of them just mean to you all these years later, and then what you guys were able to accomplish too yesterday?
Yeah, I appreciate it. You know, there's these pictures of me around our gym, and I'm glad we're going to take them down now because we can put some new photos up. You know, when you're the coach here, you know, not only, you know, Coach Carrill, we all know we're honoring him this season, but there's a long history of winning, and it's a lot. You know, you want to do the best, and you feel it just in a particularly different way when it's your alma mater, but can't talk about, you know, my time as a player. At least I don't. And you know, I'm so proud of this, and this is for me miles more enjoyable than that win, because you know it's really hard to get here, and you just understand. I know from just time how unusual that win was way back then, and this is really special, and you need to have a really special, you know, you live one kind of special life in the tournament, and you know you got a really good group, you know, we are a very tough group. These things can happen, and I'm just so happy for them. We were at dinner last night, and I was like, "Yeah, do you have any idea what you just did?" And they were all kind of to a person shaking their head, "No, you know." But we want to keep this thing going, not content with just one.
Coach, I'll tell you this: just being around your program a few years ago, you guys are a close group, and I'm talking about guys that came before the group that you're coaching now. And I know that a lot of alumni are thrilled last night. Last time I saw you guys in the NCAA tournament, I remember being there in Buffalo in 2017. You had a shot to win the game up against Notre Dame, and it just did not fall. Did you learn anything about yourself in that game, and were you at all able to implement it a few years later when you guys are now back in the NCAA tournament?
I did. You know, for I know exactly that moment. We were down big early in that game, and I think what I've learned is just to soak in the enjoyable parts of it. The guys are they're doing the very best that they can, and I just kept saying to them, hey, smile, let's enjoy this. Like, throughout the course of the game, it is a very different feel than any other game that you play. Neutral court, you've got several different fan bases there. It's a real luxury to be back here. We're just so happy to be representing our school. As as Princeton, we some people may not look at us in Arizona in the same breath, but we do. We there's a lot of pride from our alums on us having a really good basketball team.
And where does that confidence come from? Because the last 3 years, we've seen a 15 seed beat a 2. And I've talked to Paul Mills after the game. I've talked to Shaheen Holloway. And now we're talking to you. All of you guys share that thing in common where this may be a surprise to everyone else, but it's not a surprise to you guys because you guys expected to win. So just where does that confidence come from, Coach?
It's two parts. So in our league, we were fighting for our life on Sunday to make the tournament. And, it's only one team goes from our league. We had a really rough loss 4 weeks ago against Yale. We blew an 18-point lead. It was a really, really, like, opened us up. And, you sometimes need to have a real low moment to say, like, look, okay, we can hang our head here, or we can grow and, like, really become something special together. And so that's the first part of the confidence is, like, that's who you were all season. Don't forget that part now as you're in the tournament. And then the other part is, like, look, all these guys, they're playing AAU, shoe company, Adidas, Nike, Under Armour, with on the same team as these other guys and against them. And there's really no lines. When I was growing up, all those guys were in the magazines. You weren't on the same level, just because they were separated. But that's not the case. So I think the world's a little smaller for them. And again, those schools in front of us before us, the St. Peters's of the world, they paved the way for something special like this to happen. So you just believe you can do it.
I know you're honoring the legendary coach, Pete Carril, who unfortunately did pass away in August, and this season is for him. Just shared with me a little bit about your thoughts last night. I'm sure Coach definitely was right in the front of your brain walking off the court and then when you were celebrating the win last night.
Yeah, when we beat UCLA, that was one of his first tournament wins. And I remember, last night, you get Coach would always say to us, I'm preparing you to win the game. Against UCLA, the ball was thrown up and he told us, just run back because you're not going to get it. So all five guys just ran back on defense. And, I think that, Coach would be he was just so happy. And the best piece of advice he gave me was be yourself. And he loved Princeton basketball. And I know he'd be so thrilled for this group.
When you go through a moment like that, Mitch Henderson, and I know after the game, it's just a blur and it's euphoric. When you got in bed last night, and you just put that head on the pillow and, like, you look up at the ceiling and you could really take a deep breath and process what you guys accomplished. Just what was going through your head last night?
Just had a huge smile and kind of shaking my head. And you think about all the little moments. To be a part of something with a group, it's 16 guys and trainer and coaching staff and a strength and conditioning coach. Yeah, sort of a really tight-knit group. For a long part, and everybody to a person is just, it's like the best moment you've had in your life. And so you just really thankful to be a part of it. Parents entrust their kids with us here at the university for a world-class life-changing experience. And that's what we do here at Princeton. And we take great pride in that.
Mitch Henderson, I love the NCAA tournament. My favorite part about it is you get to hear stories and you get to really chronicle the stories of your players. Tosun, how you guys got him, Brett McConnell going over to England. He didn't play organized basketball until he's 15. Just how have you been able to see him grow the last 3 years, not only as a player but a person? Because what he did yesterday was very special and a great moment for him.
Yeah, we follow up on all those emails, and Brett went over there. You know, it's almost always a little bit of a shot in the dark, but sometimes you get lucky. And for us, you know, he's just been so fortunate. The main thing I would say about Tosun is his humility. He allows you to coach him. He's accepting of all of that. And, he comes from a place of wanting to learn. He's actually still improving right now. His best basketball is in front of him. And, even during the game, I'm like, okay, you know, start to figure it out. This is what you need to do. And he's nodding his head. And there's never any moment where Tosun's not learning and processing the game. So, he really is a special player.
You guys made 4 3-pointers yesterday. 3 came from Blake Peters. Just how about what he was able to contribute in his really important 15 minutes on the court yesterday?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, we couldn't find the rim. And Blake was, you know, so typical. It was just like knocked down. I mean, his minutes were so huge for us, and he had a big one to cut it to 3. And he was just terrific.
How about the scene in the locker room after the game? I saw the video that Princeton put out, Mitch Henderson, of you just getting drenched in a water bottle celebration. But that just had to be such a thrill.
Water fights. Come on, there's nothing better. it's so cool, and the tournament does, as you guys know, it's just like, the way they do it, you know, you slap your name up on the bracket advancing. I mean, it's just so special, and there's a large media presence here. So we're really feeling great.
What's the first thought of Missouri as you guys try to go punch a ticket to the Sweet 16?
They're tough. I mean, really, they give you a lot of different looks defensively. You were going to have to take care of the ball. Dennis Gates does such a good job. So we know, you know, you catch your breath. You know, we play back-to-backs in the Ivy League, so this extra day of preparation feels like an eternity for us. So it's kind of nice to have one day here, and we'll be ready to go tomorrow.
Last thing I'll ask you, Coach Mitch Henderson, and really do appreciate you doing this. You talked a little bit about what you told the guys at dinner, but when you were able to get the team together and just express your message to them after the game, what was that message?
I just said, you know, I'm so proud of what they did for one another, and what they are for one another is very clear. I mean, we the group has a really great will to win, and people and our alums appreciate that. They like seeing that, and they relate to it. A toughness, you know, a stick-to-itiveness, so to speak. So we're imperfect too, and we celebrate that. But I just reminded them how happy they made their alums and their university.
Did the win hit you in the moment?
Yeah, oh yeah, gosh. We were down the whole game.
Yeah.
to kind of get the win right there at the very end, I didn't feel it until it really the buzzer went off. All of a sudden, I was like, oh my God, we just won.
Well, Coach, I'm so happy for your program and your assistants and the players and your family as well. Good luck coming up tomorrow, and hopefully we see you in the Sweet 16. Really appreciate you doing this, Mitch.
That would be great. Thank you so much, guys. Appreciate it.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
So just real quickly, going back to this Virginia game yesterday where Furman stuns Virginia, and now this is the third double-digit seed that does take down Virginia in recent memory in the NCAA tournament. You go back to UMBC. You've had also Ohio take them down. And then yesterday you did see Furman take down Virginia. So when you go through this through the last few years, and they've also won a national championship in that NIT, a lot of people are crushing Tony Bennett for not taking a timeout. We were earlier then had some questions about it. I found another quote, Hickey, afterwards. And I read you the quotes where him talking about why Kihei didn't call a timeout himself. And then one of the reporters, I guess, followed up, but like, Coach, why didn't you call the timeout to bail out Clark? And this was Tony Bennett's response. I don't know if the refs were near me. That's what he said after the game. So, like, part of me, you're the coach, right? And you're responsible for everything. And like you were saying, and this rule has changed, like years ago, coaches couldn't call timeouts like during play. It'd have to be on the player. But now they altered that a few years ago. You could do so in the final 2 minutes. You just have to have clear possession, which he did. So Tony Bennett could have called the timeout. And when you just go afterwards like, yeah, I just don't know if the refs were near me. When has that ever prevented a coach from calling a timeout? If you're thinking about it, you could scream, timeout! I want a bleeping timeout! So like, yes, part of me does not expect Tony Bennett to think that his player, who is so experienced, has been there since the national title game, is going to throw the ball all the way down the court with only one man there and like two or three Furman players around him. So I could understand if that was like his reasoning. I just didn't think he was going to call it, and he's trapped. Eventually, we think we're going to foul. We're going to wait like maybe another second so we don't get a violation and then all that. Like, if that was your explanation, fine. But if you're just saying, yeah, I don't know if the refs were near me, Hickey, that's a bad look on Tony Bennett.
He was basically then admitting, whether you know, in indirect words, that he was basically doing what you were doing and I was doing.
Watching. Yeah.
He just got caught up in the moment, sitting there, standing like, oh, crap, what are we going to do here? Instead of, you know, again, worse than there, thinking the same thing. But you're the coach. You have a chance to bail your own player out again. You would think a guy who's been there as long as Clark would be able to just have the wherewithal to call timeout. I'm sure he wasn't expecting what actually happened to happen, but still, you have a chance to control the situation. He's already standing, so I can't say get off your butt, but do something. Be active.
And now, to be clear, they did call a timeout afterwards. Like, after that play that happened, they did call a timeout to reset, try to calm down the emotions, and then things did not go their way in, like, the 2 seconds that were left after it. But once again, to give you the initial response, it was, I don't know if Kia thought no one was there and the clock was running out. I'm not sure, but we should have called a timeout or we could have gotten a tie-up. We had it and it unfolded. I think had he gotten the tie-up, he would have called timeout in there. And then he eventually said he has to see how it played out. And he then also did go on to say, but the main focus still, according to the reporter, appeared to be Clark's decision to not go for the tie-up as opposed to the team's collective decision not to call timeout. And then it was, but then when he was asked, why didn't he call a timeout to bail out Clark himself? Because he's allowed to do that. I don't know if the refs were near me. And then eventually did go on to say how much he loved coaching him here and he would not be in this spot without him. You know, you look at Tony Bennett, I'll just ask the question. Is this a guy who we all consider a great coach because he won the national championship, but then we've seen in other sports, right? Like a guy like John Gruden win a championship and then really not do much positive after that. Is that going to be Tony Bennett where you lose to UMBC, then you win the national title? I get that. You have the COVID season. Then you lose to Ohio. You have the NIT last year. And then this year you lose to Furman. Like, is this just going to be a guy now that we forget the national title a little bit and he just has that stench of this is now a guy in, like, what, the last 5-6 years that has lost to 3 double-digit seeds? Because that's what it's starting to feel like. Like, I feel like Virginia next year, and I went into the tourney yesterday picking Furman. I'm not going to throw a parade for myself. I get that. But I feel like now you're going to need to adapt a little bit because that Virginia offense is very slow to begin with. And I know they won a national title not that long ago, but I feel like it doesn't cancel out the national championship because you'd rather have the national championship than don't, obviously, and people are always going to remember that run. But I wouldn't be surprised if we start talking about some of these bad performances where it's like, yeah, you lost to UMBC, then you won a national title, but then after that, you lost to Ohio, and then you lost to Furman, Hickey.
It's such a conundrum because, like you said, he has the national title, so the person I'm trying to compare him to in a different sport, it doesn't make sense because we always rag on this guy for no postseason success.
Who's that?
It's almost like Kirk Cousins in a way because
like you get
Virginia
there.
And Tony Bennett, they're always good in the regular season. Like they were a 4 seed this year. Obviously, they were 1 seed when they won the national title. They were 1 seed when they were upset by UMBC. So it's not like it's a program that got lucky 1 year, got hot at the right time, won a national title, but it's always been out of the national relevance ever since, either before and after. They're always in the mix. They're always in the ACC, you know, top of the rankings. They're always, you know, a 4, 5, 2, 3, 1 seed. So it's not like this is a guy who can't coach or got lucky. They are consistently really good, but it's like come tournament time, like I said, outside of the one time they won a national title in 2019.
Which big deal.
It's been early losses, and it's been disappointment more than not. And so it's like the Kirk Cousins thing, in one sense, works because it's a lot of playoff disappointment, but in another sense, it doesn't because he actually has a championship and Kirk doesn't. But it's like the regular season, they are both really consistently good, where it's like you're not going to get many better coaches, but he does leave you wanting more when you're constantly up at the top and more times than not losing way earlier than you should.
And let me be clear. I'm not sitting here saying fire Tony Bennett. Like, I would be the biggest dope in America if I got on the radio and said that today. But the next 2 to 3 years, Hickey, I think will really navigate and control that conversation. Not that he has to go win another national championship, but if he doesn't see in the next 3 years, let's say the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, like he doesn't get to another Sweet 16 and he has like next year a team that's a 4, 5, or 3 and they lose to one of these double digit seeds, then it starts to be, okay, you have UMBC, but UMBC kind of got washed away because of the national title. But then since that national title, it's been 2 appearances in the tourney, and you lose yesterday to a 13 seed in Furman, and then you lost to a 13 seed in Ohio. So like the next 2 or 3 years, if they only win one game and they never see another second weekend in the tourney, I do think the conversation about Tony Bennett is like, yeah, he's won a national championship, but then also there's a lot of ugliness in there where they get into the dance, but then some of these losses are just inexcusable. Like yesterday, don't get me wrong, Furman, with their story at the SoCon, what they did last year, they came up short, the buzzer beater. It was awesome to see them do that, but how many times they had a chance to win that game yesterday? It seems like there's a mental block right there in that program where they couldn't hit free throws, or you just have an experience by Kia Clark just panic and throw the ball, and there was no control and no timeout called.
Maybe the better cop is Aaron Rodgers. You win one.
Yeah.
You're a really good coach. Like, Tony Bennett's a really good coach.
That's a good one.
But it's, like, underachieving. He always leaves you wanting more, and it's disappointing when you look back. It's like, oh, one championship and one deep run in the postseason. So it's got to be better.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. When we come on back, what are the Panthers going to do with the number one pick? A little change of the conversation from Schefter, Adam Schefter.